Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly and I'm hosting today's show as usual. I'm also founder of the UK charity Yes to Life that's been pushing forward the cause of integrative medicine for cancer for the last two decades, helping people find out about lifestyle and complementary approaches through which they can help themselves through treatment and hopefully to a lasting recovery. My guest today is a leading expert, not in cancer, but in chronic fatigue type conditions, HEMI and the like. And this means her knowledge and expertise has much relevance to those with cancer who commonly suffer from this type of condition. I'm speaking to Dr. Sarah Myhill at her clinic near the Welsh borders. Hi, Sarah. So great to have you as my guest on the Yes to Life show.
Thank you, Robbie. Very kind. You fire away some questions and I shall do my best to address them.
Excellent. So today I'm righting a wrong that I realise, as I've never had you as my guest on the show before, can't believe it. The good news is here you are, and today we're going to bring together two of the most compelling and fascinating resources for people with cancer and chronic disease, and speaking about them independently and in combination. So I'm talking about photodynamic therapy, or PDT as it's known for short, and methylene blue, both really venerable therapies with long track records. So for many people listening, both of these might be new territory. So I think we've got to summarize the basics first. Like, let's start with methylene blue. What is it and why might it be of interest to a lot of people with a variety of chronic diseases?
Well, the key point when addressing any disease, it doesn't matter what that disease process is what are the mechanisms by which that disease is being caused, is being created. Because if you know what the mechanisms are, then that has obvious implications for management. So we have to ask about mechanisms. Now, when it comes to cancer, we have to ask what is the mechanism by which that cancer has arisen. And what's so fascinating about cancer is it's been long thought to be, oh, well, it's genetic damage to the DNA in the cell genome, and that's what's driving the tumour. And we now know that is not the case. And you're probably aware of some fascinating experiments done by Thomas Seyfried, or are certainly highlighted by him, who looked at cells that are growing in vitro. And there was one cell line that was cancerous and one cell line that was normal cells. And what he showed that is if you took the nucleus from the cancer cell and you put it in normal cells, the cells remained normal. But if you took the nucleus from the normal cells and put that in a cancerous cells, the cell remained cancerous. So what that tells us is it's not the nucleus that's the problem, it's something in the cell cytoplasm, it's something in the metabolism of the cell itself. And we now know what that something is, it's mitochondria. And what makes cancer cells different from normal cells is cancer cells switch off their mitochondria and they get their energy through fermentation. And that is the fundamental difference. So what that tells us is that anything that we can do to improve mitochondrial function is going to help the immune system fight that cancer cell. Then. And that's what it's all about, because we know we all have the power within us to heal that cancer that we may have. Now, obviously, I think of this as a war, as a battle. And the fact of the matter is we're all throwing up new cancer cells all the time. But the immune system recognizes those cells are bad, nips them off, kills them off before the numbers build up and cause pathology. So we're producing cancer cells all the time. Of course, if the immune system starts to lose that battle and we have large numbers of cancer cells build up, then yes, we're diagnosed with a breast tumor, with a prostate cancer, with a lymphoma, with a leukemia or whatever. And at that point, then sometimes, yes, we have to use the big guns just to reduce the number of cancer cells, which might be surgery, it might be radiotherapy, it might be chemotherapy. And you know, for some people, there's no question those interventions are essential to save their lives. But you and I start to come in at the point where, A, we don't want to get cancer in the first place.
True.
And B, maybe everything that can be done has been done, and we want to stop secondaries developing. And that's the point where you and I can be useful, because we can teach people the sort of things they need to do to look after their mitochondria and to supply the immune system with the raw material that it needs to function. Now, as you pointed out, methylene blue is going to be is already a very useful tool to improve the body's defenses against cancer. And the joy is it's a very simple tool to use. It's a very safe tool to use. It's a very easy tool to use. And we have to do it in conjunction with all else. Now, many people listening to you and I talking will be thinking, oh, I wonder what we can do. One simple thing we can do in order to cure our cancer. And it's not like that.
Right.
Methylene blue is just one tool. It's not the most important tool. We have to apply everything, because it's very tempting for people to say, oh, I've got a cancer. I don't want to change my wicked ways. You know, I don't want to change my diet or my lifestyle. You know, I don't want to give up smoking. I don't want to give up drinking. I don't want to give up my sugar and carbs. I just want to do something easy to get rid of my cancer. It's not like that. Methylene blue won't work. It has to be part of a whole package of treatment.
Right.
And as part of that package, it's a very useful tool. So the package obviously starts off, as you know, with diet. If you're not prepared to make major changes to your diet to cut out the sugars and the carbohydrates, then the methylene blue simply isn't going to be that helpful. So we start off with a whole other package of treatments. But when coming to methylene blue works in many possible ways to help cancer. The first thing it does is it helps to improve mitochondrial function. Now, mitochondria, as you know, are the little organelles within cells that generate energy. You know, and it's mitochondria that make the difference between life and death.
Right.
If you can't generate energy in that cell is dead. If the cell is dead, the organ is dead. If the organ is dead, you are dead. So mitochondria just so absolutely vital for this. And they work essentially by moving electrons around and by moving protons around. You know, they're an electrical organ, if you like.
Right.
And we're not going to go into the mechanics of that. But they have to be very good at handling electrons and handling protons. And that process has to occur in as frictionless as way as possible. Now, methylene blue is so interesting because it facilitates electron movement within mitochondria. It allows mitochondria to work much more efficiently. It helps with energy delivery mechanisms. And therefore, it's going to be useful for any condition associated with poor mitochondrial function. Now, that's where I got interested in it because, as you know, my specialist interest is patients with fatigue syndromes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, fatigue is often a feature of people with cancer.
Yes.
With fatigue syndromes, because it helps energy delivery mechanisms. It allows our mitochondria to work more efficiently and therefore as implicated for any disease process associated with poor energy delivery. So yes, cancer, yes, chronic fatigue syndrome, yes, heart disease, yes, dementia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, that is a very useful starting point.
Yeah.
The other way by which methylene blue is helpful is because we now know that nearly all cancers have an infectious driver or an infectious associate. So, for example, many of the herpes viruses, like Epstein-Barr virus, like HHV6, like cytomegalovirus, like herpes 1 and 2, like human papillomavirus, we all know that they can drive cancers. And i.e. most cancers have an infectious driver. And again, methylene blue is very helpful because it has broad spectrum antimicrobial activity. It's
right.
A very useful antibiotic. And the important thing is it does this. It inhibits bacteria and kills many viruses without causing any collateral damage to the body whatsoever.
Amazing.
So it makes it almost the perfect antimicrobial.
Yeah. Yeah, very different to antibiotics and things, of course.
Correct. And then some people immediately jump up and say, oh, well, what about the microbiome? Isn't it going to be damaging to the microbiome? And as we know, the last, 5 foot of gut, the large bowel, the colon, the last section of the gut is full of kilograms of bacteria, which do much good for us. You know, the microbiome is essential for our health. It's essential to get energy from fiber, to program the immune system, to synthesize neurotransmitters, to synthesize various vitamins and other such essentials for the body. And the joy of methylene blue is we swallow it, take it by mouth, and then it's completely absorbed into the bloodstream and excreted in the urine. So although our urine will go blue when we take methylene blue, our feces do not go blue. So the microbiome is sustained. So again, all these issues make methylene blue a very useful tool for anybody with for many different pathologies. Good. And where the photodynamic therapy comes in is that helps to activate the methylene blue, because in the body it works by oscillating from methylene blue, which guess what is blue, to leucomethylene blue, which is white. And as it gives up an electron or accepts an electron, the color slips. Good. And photodynamic therapy facilitates that flipping from one form to another. So that enhances the action of that. So these are two very useful tools for people with fatigue syndromes, other pathologies, and almost certainly cancer as well.
Mm. Well, very interesting. You haven't actually said what methylene blue is yet. It sounds all very exotic, but what is it?
Oh, it's a dye. It's probably one of the first synthetic molecules that was generated. It was developed by Paul Ehrlich, and he won the Nobel Prize in the 1880s for its efficacy in treating malaria. At one stage, it used to be given to all members of people in the Royal Navy in order to protect them from getting malaria when they're in tropical climes, for example. And it's a proven benefit against the malaria parasite. It's also a proven benefit against COVID-19. So, you know, very cheap, very effective treatment that should be available to all. It's also antifungal, and we know that many diseases are driven by fungi. So, yes, it is a molecule. It is a dye. Its main use that doctors recognize for is for staining tissues. So if you took a biopsy from somebody and you wanted to look at it under the microscope, you would add methylene blue, because methylene blue dyes parts of those tissues blue, so you can see what's going on in the cell.
Right.
So that's the use of that, not as a clinical use, as a purely for pathological slides, but to say it has a great many other functions that are incredibly useful to us humans.
Mm. And do we know how methylene blue made the flip from dyeing things to actually being a medicine? That's a strange thing to happen.
Well, doctors are experimenters. And when you are faced with a new disease for which maybe there's a death sentence or maybe no other possible treatments, then with the patient's full knowledge and consent, then we can try these things.
Okay, interesting. So one question, you've made the case for why it's of interest to people with cancer, because, cancer is a metabolic problem and this is going to help your metabolism. That has to be good. And so many people are on top of having cancer.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink, perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active, available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Is there a link between methylene blue and cachexia?
Well, we have to ask, what's the mechanism of cancer cachexia? Because the shocking thing is so many cancer patients are told, go and eat as much sugar and dairy products and carbs you possibly can in order that you can put on weight and maintain your weight and maybe get fat, so that when the cancer cachexia comes along, you'll survive a bit longer. Now, that is rotten advice, but you would be horrified to hear how many people are given precisely that advice. Now, the reason that cancer, I believe, causes cancer cachexia is because, as we've discussed, the only way that cancer cells can survive is by burning sugars and carbohydrates. And it does that by a process of fermentation. It's anaerobic metabolism. Now, when you generate energy anaerobically, it's very inefficient. So one molecule of glucose will generate just two molecules of ATP for that cancer cell to use. But by contrast, if you are burning glucose through mitochondria, that is done with in the presence of oxygen. It's extremely efficient, and one molecule of glucose will produce anything up to 36 molecules of ATP. So if suddenly you've got a lot of tissues in your body, i.e. cancer cells, fermenting sugar anaerobically, as you can see, it's incredibly inefficient. It needs a lot of sugar. It needs a lot of carbohydrates to do that. And as a result, energy is burnt very inefficiently and the weight literally drops off. So that is one possible mechanism of cancer cachexia. Of course, there are other mechanisms. Some people just lose their appetite. Some people are unable to digest and absorb their food, and so they can't get the goodness from that. But I suspect this switch into anaerobic metabolism is a major cause of cancer cachexia.
Hmm. So anything you do to actually address the mitochondria is going to help in some way to slow that process.
Correct. But the most important thing to do is that what makes human cells different from cancer cells is, to say, human cells run on mitochondria, and mitochondria will happily run on ketones. And so the key for all cancer patients, for avoiding cancer and for treating it, is to eat a low-carbohydrate ketogenic diet. And then you are literally starving out your cancer cells. Now, there are some fabulous books out there about how to starve cancer. There's Jay McLennan's book, which I'm sure you're familiar with. There's Kelly Turner's book about cancer. But all of them emphasize the importance of diet, of cutting out the junk food, which basically is carbohydrate-based, of cutting out the processed foods, which is basically carbohydrate and processed fats, and consuming a paleo ketogenic diet. Cut out the dairy products because they're growth promoting. The gluten grains, they're all high in carbohydrates. But if you eat a good paleo ketogenic diet and test to make sure that you are getting the right results. Now, there are two ways that we can test to make sure we've got high ketones in our blood and stable, steady, low levels of glucose. And this is very empowering for any cancer patient. So We can measure glucose levels using continuous glucose monitoring. And you can get devices on Amazon. There's one called Freestyle Libre that's produced by Abbott. That you, it's a little device and you just push into your skin there. It's painless. And I know that because I've tried it. And using a smartphone, then it tells you exactly what your blood sugar is doing. Now, you can't get a blood sugar of zero. Obviously, you know, you would be dead if that were the case. But we want the blood sugar to be as low as possible and as stable as possible. And the joy of the continuous glucose monitoring is you can see exactly what your diet is doing to your blood sugars.
Right.
And that is very empowering because you can choose a meal which you think, well, that's a healthy meal, that's going to be good for me, and you can eat it, and then you can see exactly what happens to your blood sugar. Now, if the blood sugar goes flying up to 8 or 9, then that was not a good meal for you to have. That tells you that you've cheated. Or you know, you've got to do better. But many people are surprised and encouraged by the foods that they can get away with rather than the foods that they can't. So that's a very good start. And the second thing to do is to get a ketone breath meter. Now, this is one called AceTrack, which again is linked to the smartphone. And that's very useful because we want the ketones to be running high. We want the ketones to be running higher than can't say higher, but in terms of millimoles per liter, you know, higher than blood sugar, because again, that's feeding our mitochondria and that's starving out our cancer cells. And that one simple intervention is going to be incredibly helpful to prevent the cancer from progressing and help protect us from getting secondaries. So those two devices are very useful to keep us on track with the diet.
Mm. Some of these the new gadgets do actually make it a lot easier than it used to be to monitor these things and to actually be able to do it yourself very easily, which is rather fantastic.
Correct. And getting that positive feedback all the time, yes, I'm doing it right, yes, I'm doing it right, is so empowering. Now, I do see the continuous glucose monitor, it only lasts 2 weeks. It costs about £55, but I think it's £55 very well spent. And then you can start to adjust your diet until your blood sugars are steady and they are stable. Now, just one little clinical tip here. The second most important thing we need to do is to take big doses of vitamin C. And the reason for that is that vitamin C kills all cancer cells. And it kills all cancer cells much more efficiently when blood sugar levels are low and stable.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I think that the vitamin C is so efficacious is because biochemically it looks very similar to a glucose molecule. In fact, you know, my little dog who's sitting next to me, she can make, as can all other mammals, she can make vitamin C from glucose. It's a four enzyme step for that to happen. But it illustrates the point that vitamin C looks like glucose. And so if the cancer cells are being starved of sugar because you're doing a low carbohydrate diet and you're demonstrating that with your continuous glucose monitoring, they will grab something else that looks like sugar. And guess what? Vitamin C looks like sugar. And it'll grab the vitamin C to try to burn it as a fuel, and that kills the cancer cells. So taking vitamin C in parallel with glucose turbocharges your low carbohydrate diet. And I like people to take vitamin C to bowel tolerance. So they start off with maybe 0.5 gram, 1 gram, 2 grams, 3 grams, 5 grams, 10 grams. Gradually increase the dose until you start to get bowel symptoms. If you take too much vitamin C, you get a bit of rumbly tummy, maybe wind, maybe foul smelling, farting, and ultimately diarrhea. So you have to get up to that level in order to get the dose of vitamin C right, and then reduce that a little bit so you end up with no, you know, adverse gut symptoms whatsoever. Now, just a little note here. Vitamin C, as I said, looks like glucose. And what that means is when you do continuous glucose monitoring, it will look like you've taken more sugar. So if you take and I demonstrated this myself, because it just so happened as I was testing, I started with the first hint of a cold. Now, whenever anybody gets the first hint of a cold, we should take big doses of vitamin C. Why? Because that will make the cold less severe and less prolonged. It's because it contact kills all microbes. And the way I advise is take 10 grams of vitamin C every hour until you get the trots.
That's a lot.
So this was so interesting because my blood sugars, you know, hitherto had been absolutely level. Yes, I'd done a few experiments eating a bit of this, a bit of that to see if I got a little spike or whatever. But I took 10 grams every hour for 4 hours. So I took 40 grams of vitamin C. And my blood sugar reading shot up to 11. So it wasn't a blood sugar reading of 11. It was a blood sugar plus a vitamin C reading of 11. In fact, there's a very lovely example of this, of a lady who had a pancreatic cancer. And she was due for a chemotherapy in the afternoon. So she went and had intravenous vitamin C that morning. Now, of course, you can get much higher levels of vitamin C in the bloodstream from intravenous vitamin C. Of course, it's not available to all. But she had 50 grams of vitamin C as an intravenous dose. When she went for her chemotherapy in the afternoon, they checked her blood sugar and it came back at 29. Now, of course, you and I know she didn't have a blood sugar of 29. That was a vitamin C effect. But the doctors didn't know that. They thought she developed acute diabetes. They treated her with insulin straight away and they jolly nearly killed her because the vitamins, of course, the blood sugar went so low, she suddenly developed hypoglycemia and blacked out. Now, fortunately, somebody worked out what was going on and had the good sense to give her some glucose. So she survived. But it illustrates the point that vitamin C gives you false readings on a glucose monitor. So just bear that in mind when you're doing continuous glucose monitoring.
Very interesting and useful advice. Thank you. All right. So let's park methylene blue and that side of things and move over to PDT now. So PDT could easily be the subject of the whole show, of course. So we're going to have to be a bit light on detail of it, excuse the pun. Although it's got a long history, as we mentioned, it's been going for well over a century. It seems to have made huge strides just in the last few decades, I think. Mainly, I think, through the development of more effective photosensitizers. Maybe you can tell us, first of all, well, what is PDT? What's the mechanism at work here in PDT? And then we can talk about photosensitizers and that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, what photodynamic therapy does is it's essentially it's supplying energy directly to cells for the business of creating energy, and for the business of killing microbes and killing cancer cells. And it works in a multiplicity of ways. So simply by improving energy delivery mechanisms, all the things we've talked about will be accentuated. So the mitochondria will work even better. This is why we all love sunbathing. You know, I love sunbathing. You know, it's lovely being nice and warm, but you come away from that feeling energized and ready to go.
Absolutely.
Sunshine has ditto far infrared therapy. You know, I love my patients have four far infrared saunas, but any heat will generate far infrared, and that's all part of photodynamic therapy. So it protects against free radical damage. So the mechanism by which the immune system kills microbes and kills cancer cells generates free radicals, and it helps to mop those up to make those less dangerous and less toxic. It works in many ways, and of course, but it directly kills microbes. We know that's the case. And in the 1920s and the 1930s, a well-recognized treatment for tuberculosis was to send people to Switzerland, where they go to a Toffa mountain and they would sunbathe. And for many people, that cured their tuberculosis. In fact, Nobel Prize for Medicine in 1916, I think, was won for a device.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with NasalGuard for pet lovers. NasalGuard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try NasalGuard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about NasalGuard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, aunt and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Many conditions that are sensitive to light. It's a fantastic treatment. Just another example, you know, I have a water that comes in from a spring, and we irradiate it with ultraviolet light, and it kills all the microbes in the water instantaneously. So it's a fantastically useful treatment. And again, the microbiome is protected because it's deep down in the gut, and light photodynamic therapy cannot access the microbiome. So it's not going to upset our friendly microbes, which should be on our skin.
Right.
So what it's doing is it's doing many of the things that methylene blue is doing and exacerbating those as well. And there are lots of wonderful studies showing the efficacy of methylene blue to prevent neurodegeneration, to improve mitochondrial function, to improve circulation. We know that there's a doctor in South Africa called James Laporte who's developed a skull cap to go over the head, and he's using that to treat dementia and Parkinson's disease, for example.
Right.
And he's using light at 810 nanometers for the wavelength. So, you know, autism would be susceptible to, we know that that helps by laser therapy. Almost any bacterial infection, many inflammatory conditions associated with sticky blood is all going to be helped by photodynamic therapy. And if you think about this from an evolutionary perspective, primitive woman was walking around in Africa, you know, naked in full sunshine 12 hours a day.
Right.
And so, of course, you know, when the body gets a free energy source like that, it's going to employ it in a multiplicity of ways to improve health because it's free. It's freely available. And now we have developed a ridiculous sun phobia. You know, we are told, you know, oh, if you can see your shadow, well, then you must put on suntan lotion. Don't sunbathe. It's terribly dangerous for you. Absolute tosh. And in fact, studies in America where you look at disease incidence state by state, and of course all states hold their own statistics, show us that the sunshine states have much lower incidence of cancer than all the other states. So, you know, there's very, very clear epidemiological evidence that sunshine is very good for us, and we should get as much sunshine as we can whenever we can. I mean, not so much that we burn. That would be stupid, because when you burn, that's obviously these damage.
It's quite obviously bad, yeah.
So we have to use our noddle. We have to use our sense, common sense. But of course, the way that sunshine is delivered in this country is it starts off in the spring and it gradually builds up, and we should be going out. I mean, obviously, primitive women would have lived out in the sunshine. And of course, so she would have gradually built up, and the skin would have learned to go brown. so that by the end of the summer, we'd have all been have really lovely brown bodies. I mean, when I was a child, you know, the worth of the family holiday was judged by your suntan when you got home. You know, it was a totally desirable thing to be brown. You know, it was considered to be beautiful. And now it's the other way around. You know, the young people want to be white, you know, pale white, and it's not good for their health. But what I would say is, you know, get as much sunshine as you possibly can. If you have a far infrared sauna, then please do use that. The way I suggest my chronic fatigue syndrome patients use it is you can buy a belt that goes around your middle, like a cummerbund, like a sort of a brace, which gives you the light, the red light and the near infrared light that we know is so efficacious and helpful. So that can be very easily worn. You can wear it all the time. It's like walking around in the sunshine when there isn't any sunshine. So that's the next best thing to sunshine when we haven't got it. As far as you possibly can, then I'm very privileged. I work in my conservatory, so I have wonderful full spectrum light all around me. And again, that helps me concentrate. It keeps my brain sharp. And of course, when the sun shines, I'm getting a lovely dose of red light, of far infrared light, of near infrared light, which is very good for my general well-being. Now, I'm not a cancer expert, but I'm very mindful that many of the tools that I use to treat people with chronic fatigue syndrome, like methylene blue, like photodynamic therapy, like DMSO, like ketogenic diets, all those things, we know they are also additionally helpful to prevent and treat cancer.
Mm. So with PDT, of course, you can act with two sides of the situation, if you like, in that you can expose yourself to light in some way, but you can also use a photosensitizer, a substance with it, which is actually going to have its effect. And there are, of course, a whole range of different photosensitizers which have been around more than 100 years, the oldest ones. And I think they were a pretty blunt instrument in the first place. I've only just heard recently about methylene blue being a photosensitizer, and you've alluded a bit to why it might be used as one. Well, methylene blue acts on its own. It really does a job. So do you want to talk a bit about the additional job that it does when you expose it to light?
Well, it does all the jobs that it does, but even better. And the key with methylene blue is the dose. And with all these things, we have to start low dose and build up slowly. Now, the joy of methylene blue is it's very inexpensive. And it's important to get the pharmaceutical grade methylene blue. You can get the cheap stuff that you put in fish tanks, but I wouldn't recommend that.
Right.
So you want the pharmaceutical grade methylene blue, which will have a little code on it saying BP73, British Pharmaceutical. That was a standard laid down in 1973, which is 99.99% pure or something like that.
Right.
Now, methylene blue comes in gram pots, and I suggest you get a 10-gram pot of methylene blue and add that to 1 liter of water. Now, that gives you 10 milligrams per milliliter per ml of methylene blue. So it's a very dark, inky solution. And a usual dose would be about up to 2 milligrams per kilogram of body weight and possibly more. So I weigh about 60 kilograms. So my daily dose would be 120 milligrams. That's 2 milligrams per kilogram, which would be 12 mls of the methylene blue solution that you've made up. Now, it is very blue. I mean, it's like an ink, like inky blue.
Right.
And what I recommend people do is put it into make it up with some water, and then add about 2 or 3 grams of ascorbic acid. Now, as we discussed earlier, ascorbic acid allows methylene blue to flip between leucomethylene blue and blue methylene blue. And in that pot, that will convert the methylene blue to a near colorless solution. Now, that's a good idea, because if you just drink methylene blue as it is, it will stain your teeth blue, your lips blue, your tongue blue. You know, it's enough to frighten the horses.
Right.
And if you've got any crowns, it might stain those blue for longer than you wish. So mix it with the vitamin C. That's a really important part. I can send you my handout on this, Robin, with pleasure, if you want to circulate that. So it takes about an hour to happen. So if you mix up your glass with the methylene blue, put some, ascorbic acid in there, leave it an hour till it changes, and then drink that during the course of the day. Now, it's very long-lasting in the body. We know it's long-lasting in the body because you will pee blue, and you will pee blue for some days after just one dose of methylene blue. So you can all drink it all back at one fell swoop, and then the job is done. And then over and above that, you'd then put on your cummerbund, your infrared waistcoat, if you like, which you can get on Amazon for less than £100. You charge that up with a battery, and then very often people, if they're cold, and that's a particular issue for my fatigue syndrome patient, they often feel the cold. That helps to keep them nice and warm in their house, as well as activating the methylene blue as it circulates in the bloodstream as it's passing around the body. So it's a very, you see, with my fatigue syndrome patients, and also to a large extent with patients who have cancer, fatigue is a big issue.
Yes.
And, you know, there are lots of things, you know, we would love them to do, but they simply don't have the energy to do that. You know, they are struggling already to eat the right foods and cook and just to exist. So the interventions that we put in place, they've got to be very doable. They've got to be inexpensive. They've got to be doable. They've got to be something that can be sustained. And this is a very simple intervention that's very doable and has a multiplicity of actions, and most people can easily incorporate those into their lives.
Mm. You mentioned that methylene blue is very safe, but are there any things that people should know about it? Is it really that safe?
There's only one thing which, again, comes out in all my handouts, which is it's a very mild monoamine oxidase inhibitor. Now, that can have very beneficial effects on mood, because we know MOAIs are used to treat depression. But it can interact with some foods. So you just have to be very careful about having foods containing vasoactive amines like tyramine. So blue cheeses, raw beans, alcohol, you can get an interaction with that. Now, of course, whenever I ask my patients to do anything, I always try it first to make sure that it's okay. So I took methylene blue up to 120 milligrams a day. And then I did test by eating things like broad beans, by having, you know, a glass of wine, by adding to it. And I have to say, I had no problems at all. I didn't get any headaches. My blood pressure remained exactly the same. So I didn't experience any problems. So what that tells me is that it is a mild MAOI. The potential for interactions is minimal, but people just need to be aware of those foods which can cause possible interactions.
And how about with other medications? I mean, if someone is hoping to address their energy issues when they're being treated for cancer, is there anything they should be concerned about that?
A few pain-killing drugs might, antidepressants might, amphetamines may do. So, yes, always check. So when I send out my handout with methylene blue, there's a link to MAOI interactions, so people just have just another checklist of the things that could possibly be an issue.
Right. So for somebody who's not on any medication whatsoever, but they just feel like maybe they've been struggling, they've had an infection and they're not quite kicked back again yet, that could be something they might do unsupervised.
Absolutely.
But if they're on treatment, it's probably a good idea to check it out with somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Well, yes, or just look at a list of possible interactions, you know, and I'm quite sure everybody can read and they're quite capable of looking to see that, oh, yeah, it could be sauerkraut, cured meats, some alcohols, maybe some fermented soy products, some drugs. We're all capable of looking at a list. Because the awful thing is, if anybody goes along to see their GP or their consultant and says, what about methylene blue? I think it's a jolly good idea. They will be told, oh, no, don't do that, you know, because those doctors themselves are not familiar with using methylene blue in this way.
Right.
So again, one of the first lessons that I try to get across to all my fatigue syndrome and my ME patients, and the first lesson that any cancer patient needs to learn if they're going to cure themselves is you have to take responsibility for your disease yourself. Now, what we want to do is we want to delegate responsibility to somebody else who will prescribe the drugs, do the chemotherapy, do the surgery, and they will get me well. And it's not like that. If you want to get well from any disease, cancer, fatigue, dementia, heart disease, it doesn't matter. You've got to do it yourself. You've got to work out the mechanisms by which you got that disease, because that has obvious implications for management. And the management, yes, it's difficult. It all starts with the diet. It all starts with low carbohydrate, paleo ketogenic diet. And there's only one person that can put food in your mouth, and that's you. There's going to be nobody better motivated to do the right thing, and that's you. And there's going to be nobody better able to see the effects of these interventions. Am I better? Am I worse? Is it causing this or that? Than you, and therefore go and work it out. So, okay, it's very helpful to have guides like yourself, like myself. But at the end of the day, if you are going to really recover, you've got to embrace that whole disease, learn as much as you can about it and its mechanisms, and then put in place the interventions in a logical order in order to get the best chance of a full recovery.
Mm, take ownership. Absolutely. Okay, well, we've just got a few minutes left. I wonder, do you have maybe a case history, a story you can tell us about one of your patients who's had chronic fatigue as a result of cancer, and how you've managed to help them, and what difference it's made to them?
Okay, well, one lovely lady that comes to mind is a lady came to see me with chronic lymphatic leukemia. Now, if you choose to have a cancer, it's a good one to choose to have because it's slow progressing, okay. And that means these interventions are going to be so much more efficacious than with an aggressive tumor. But when she came to see me, her white cell count was climbing up high. Now, she'd been to see the hematologist. The hematologists don't give any chemotherapy until the white cell count gets to about 50. So by the time I saw her, it was creeping up. It was in the 20s and the 30s. It was creeping up like that. And we put in place all the interventions. We put in place the paleoketogenic diet. I also asked the question, why did she have damage? What was the cause of her cancer? And a very useful test is to look for a toxicity test, to look for chemicals. And she had very high levels of lindane in her. Now, lindane is an extremely nasty organochlorine. We know where her lindane came from because when she bought her house, there were bare timbers, in the house. And the mortgage company wouldn't give her a mortgage until those exposed timbers had been sprayed with lindane.
Right.
So Rentokil came in and sprayed it. So, yes, of course, it's perfectly safe. Of course, it isn't safe at all. Mm-hmm. Because the lindane outgasses, over the years and the decades. So I'm quite sure she got her lindane from that timber treatment. Well, what we know gets rid of lindane very effectively are sauna regimes. So she did some saunering to sweat out the chemicals and then wash them off afterwards. And of course, that would have doubled up with photodynamic therapy as well. She did a paleoketogenic diet. She took vitamin C to bowel tolerance and iodine. Iodine is another one of my favorite tools. And of course, the joy of chronic lymphatic leukemia is it's very easy to monitor progress because you just do a white cell count. And it took about a year before she really got ahead of the game. And then the white cell count started to come down. And it came down, and it came down, and it came down. So that after, and this was 13 years later, 13 years on, her white cell count was absolutely plumb normal. And anybody doing a blood test would not have diagnosed chronic lymphatic leukemia.
Good.
So we controlled her condition completely with no chemotherapy, no conventional inputs, simply through these basic nutritional interventions.
Mm. Simple and to the point. Great story. Thank you for that. Okay. Well, look, we're out of time. Been a fascinating chat. I've learned a few things. Thank you very much. So these are kind of the topics we've been speaking about particularly of interest to me. So. Yeah, there are a few things catch your attention, don't they, as being like, wow, why don't more people know about that?
Absolutely. The answer to that question is follow the money.
Absolutely.
The place where the drug companies are making all their money these days is cancer chemotherapy. And in America, the oncologists purchase the drugs from Big Pharma in order to treat their patients, which means the doctors themselves have a vested interest in using expensive, toxic cancer drugs. It's a parlous state of affairs.
It certainly is. Yeah, I think I've always thought that the greatest impediments to PDT, which is a great treatment, are that it's too successful and too cheap. All right, we're going to leave it there, Sarah. Thank you very much for a fascinating chat.
My pleasure. Thank you. You all ask all the right questions, Robin. That makes it very easy for me. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. I love that chat. Dr. Myhill is someone who has consistently pushed the envelope in medicine and has never shrunk from speaking truth to power for the sake of her patients. The methylene blue, used wisely, seems to be a fantastic resource for those with cancer, not to mention a whole raft of other conditions. The handout that Dr. Myhill mentioned is available from the Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk. You just scroll down the homepage until you see the link to the radio show page, and there you'll find information about this show, together with a link to the handout. Thanks a lot for listening. I hope today gave you plenty to think about. I guess we all know someone with energy issues who might benefit. I'll be back again next week with another Yes to Life show, so I hope you'll join me again here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.